Karamcast.com.
It's my Karamcast.
Welcome to the Karamcast episode 12, numero 12. I have got my special guest, Amy Lynn Chadwick.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be in the neighborhood tonight when you were having your Karamcast.
Thanks for dropping by the old Karam Clubhouse.
No problem. I'm glad I saw you out in the street corner there.
Yeah. We were talking about yard sales the other day and how much fun they are. The early birds that show up at those things.
The early birds are crazy.
We can have yard sales here in Los Angeles because we're not covered in snow.
Yes, in the middle of winter.
And God bless you guys that are. I know it's been a rough winter, a lot of blackouts. And
yeah, my family back east, it's just been one snowstorm after another.
I avoided going back to Toronto this Christmas because I couldn't deal.
I hear you.
Just couldn't deal. Gave up the spirit of Christmas for that one.
Yeah. But yard sales are great. One man's junk is another man's treasure.
These early birds that show up usually are looking for gold jewelry that they can melt down.
And they bring their wads of cash.
Because gold never, ever devalues. It's the anti-dollar. Whenever dollars go down, gold goes up.
I'm sure I have little gold earrings and charms somewhere.
But if you have it, never get rid of it.
Really?
Doesn't matter how desperate you are. Get rid of the old stuffed animals and the tchotchkes and the video games and the snowboards, but don't give up the gold.
What's a tchotchke?
Come on, a tchotchke. It's like those little nostalgic trinkets that are around that you give to people for birthdays and they go, ha, 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 that's so neat and cute.
Oh, okay. Tchotchke. I'm going to put that one in the bank.
Yeah, it's a tough one to spell, too.
I believe it.
I won't make you try to spell tchotchke.
Please.
So we want to talk about a little lighter subject today. We're going to talk about movies. Well, it's sort of a light subject if you're looking at it from the side of what movies did you like this year. It's not a light subject if you've been reading my Culture Pin blog and following along with the entire SAG strike authorization thing. And Doug Allen, who was the national executive director of SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, was negotiating very, very hard for the actors, and he was getting a lot of resistance from a lot of the A-list actors who have enough money not to have to worry about recessions.
And we should be very clear that this set of actors is a small group of people.
Very small group, a lot of whom are also producers.
Right.
You think of Mark Wahlberg and Tom Cruise, yeah. They're also the producers, which is who the Screen Actors Guild is primarily negotiating against. What they're negotiating for was for a pay rate for online media.
Right.
For example, here's an interesting fact. Sony is releasing a television that is actually going to have a hardwire internet connection right into it, an Ethernet connection, so that you don't even need a DVR or any intermediary box. You'll simply be able to plug your cable internet right into the TV and basically watch all your TV
streaming live no matter when.
Right, which technically means that all the residuals that an actor would normally make from television broadcast would no longer apply because they would be now playing the material from an online source. And because there's no established pay rate for that, the actors would no longer see royalties. So the actors would be getting something like 3% of what they get now.
Blasphemy.
I actually got an email or a message from somebody on MySpace saying how they really appreciated all the things I did despite the fact that I was ridiculously overpaid. I'm not sure why this idea persists that actors are ridiculously overpaid, because really 2% of the entire 150,000 member base of Screen Actors Guild is really living above the poverty line.
Thank you. I can't tell you how many times I get messages from people back home and they think I should be very, very well off by now. And I don't understand where they're...
Well, you look at it this way. Most jobs, you work 200, 300 days out of the year. An actor may get a lot of money for what they do at the time. The basic SAG rate, I think, for a day is about $800, which sounds like a lot of money. But when you consider that most actors probably work as actors 2 weeks out of the year, it's not a lot of money to stretch out.
At all.
So anywho, that's the dark side, except in the end, I just to finish that off. So Doug Allen, who was negotiating very hard for the actors and was not backing down from the AMPTA, which is the Producers Association, was basically sent out. He was fired from his position because people thought he was being too obstinate, and they brought in a much more moderate set of negotiators who will probably make some kind of a sweet deal with the AMPTA, and the actors are going to get screwed out of, you know, proper pay for this.
So you think strike or no strike? It's been
there won't be a strike. The whole even the actors' ability to vote for a strike is now gone. The producers are basically saying it's far too new of a platform to be able to determine how much revenue they'll have. But if you consider that Lost has been playing online on ABC from the beginning and full screen with commercials and everything else, and people are getting paid, there's definitely a revenue stream there. And and what's more, they're able to, unlike with the Nielsen ratings, where you have a sort of an idea of how many people are watching by polling a small group of people in the Midwest, online, you're able to get real statistics of unique number of hits, how many viewers, how long they stayed, very specific kind of traffic. And so I'm not sure exactly what the producers are saying is too difficult to measure, or whether or not it's going to make money, as if we're not sure that the internet is going to be a viable source of income for people.
People aren't even watching regular TVs anymore.
Well, that's my point. And actually, I wrote on the Culture Pin this week about how we're going to be converting television to digital broadcast as opposed to the old analog. So all of those antennas on your rooftops are going to become obsolete.
Sad. I think they're cute.
Come February 17th, that's all over and it's all going to go to digital. And when I was at the National Association of Broadcasters convention a couple of years ago, that was the big, big push, was to make sure that there was an awareness in the American market about this conversion over to digital, and that the U.S. government was going to be giving out $40 vouchers towards these digital set-tops.
Now, are these vouchers going to be IOUs like our
No, they're not IOUs like California tax returns. But okay. Apparently they don't feel like there has been enough penetration in terms of awareness in the American market. And so they were asking for another 4 months. And Obama was pushing for this, among all the other things he immediately put into motion when he came into office, but we won't get into all that. And the Republicans in the House basically shot that down, and so they are not going to be extending that for 4 months before the conversion. So February 17th, if you're in the U.S. and you don't have a digital set-top converter, you won't be getting TV anymore unless you're somehow paying for a premium service or something. And on to the Oscar nominees for this year.
Let's do that.
So it was an interesting year. As usual, a lot of incredible films were completely overlooked. Some surprises showed up on the list. Frozen River was a movie that was made for a couple million dollars, and it was shot on HD, and it's about a very unusual sort of story. It's not typical Hollywood fare, so it's always cool to see something like that figure up there with the rest of it.
Now, a movie like that would be seen primarily in the festival circuit?
Yeah. So Melissa Leo, who stars in Frozen River, made a big splash. That film was a favorite at Sundance. And like Amy Adams did with June Bug a few years back, which was
movie.
What really launched her. Sometimes these small films get through, but there's some really strange omissions. I remember when we were at the Toronto Film Festival in 2008, we saw artist Steve McQueen's feature film debut, Hunger.
Oh, wow.
Which was just an absolutely astonishingly well-crafted film, especially for a debut actor. Unlike the MTV Awards, where they have Best New Artist and all of that, they don't have Best New Director at the Oscars. But if they did, I'm sure it would be a head-to-head battle between Charlie Kaufman for his direction of Synecdoche, New York.
Synecdoche? I've heard it pronounced so many different ways.
It's Synecdoche. I heard him actually say it in an interview on Creative Screenwriter on their podcast when he was interviewed. But it's actually not spelled the way that the actual place is spelled. So anyways. And Steve McQueen, who's this English, it's not Steve McQueen, the star of Bullet, the, you know, Mr. Tough Guy. It's actually...
He's actually an artist, right?
He's actually a black English artist who typically screens his films in art installations and stars in his own films. But Hunger is about the members of the Irish Republican Army and went on a hunger strike that became quite big news there. And it stars Michael Fassbender. And we saw this at the festival. And I mean, I could barely sit in my seat. I was so anxious watching this film.
I've never talked myself into actually standing up and walking out of a movie, not because it's bad or because it lacked in artistic ability, but it just hit me so strongly. The visuals were so intense.
And yet it's completely absent from the Oscars.
Really?
Whereas Danny Boyle's Slumdog Millionaire, which was also at the festival and was the People's Choice at the Toronto Film Festival, is a favorite this year for not just Best Director, but Best Film.
Wow.
As is Milk, which is Sean Penn's almost annual feature and up in the academies. Frost Nixon, which probably opened on 50 screens nationwide. And then the...
Where's
the
Detroit Metal City in all this?
Yeah,
I want to know.
Detroit Metal City, which was the amazing Japanese film based on the manga.
Man, that should win an Oscar.
Definitely got no Best Foreign Film nod.
Damn.
I also want to share with our listeners something very special and very exclusive, which is my friend Daniel Waters. He wrote Heathers and he directed Happy Campers, which is where a film that he directed where I met him.
And he's one hell of a guy.
Yeah, he has an annual Super Bowl party at his house, which incidentally is where Orson Welles lived and eventually died. Mm-hmm. Quite a special occasion. Well, he's got the safe where the original script for Citizen Kane was kept.
So cool.
Basically, the gist of this party is that everybody who goes has to bring their list of their favorite films from the last year, regardless of whether they were nominated for an Oscar or not. And you learn an awful lot from these lists because a lot of Daniel's friends are screenwriters. Some of them are Oscar-nominated screenwriters. And there's a lot of browbeating and teasing about choices that people make. So I guess the theme of this episode is because Daniel couldn't have the party this year, we wanted to bring that spirit out to you guys and share some of the things that we agreed with that are on the Oscar list and that some of the things that Dan puts on his list, which is absolutely a massive list. He must have.
This is the longest list I've ever seen.
I think there's about 350 films on this list. I don't know how he sees this many movies. We're talking new movies. We're not talking go to Blockbuster and dig through. We're talking 350 movies this year. So we're going to go through the top.
Some of these I can't even imagine him sitting through.
15 or 20 of these. So here's from Dan's list. And the way he does it, he starts with a 10, which is a 10 rating, and then he works his way down to a 0 rating. So 10 is the absolute best and rarely is found. But his 10 ratings are, there's only one film, and that is Synecdoche, New York. And he says, if you didn't respond to it as much as I did, you're lucky. That's his once in a blue moon masterpiece. And every year he may have one, some years he certainly doesn't. Then we get into his truly excellent, his number 9s.
Okay.
And on that list, the first one is Steve McQueen's Hunger.
Cool.
Then we have A Christmas Tale. I don't know what that is. Did you even see it?
No, I've never even heard of it.
Tell No One. What's that? The Dark Knight.
Okay, I saw The Dark Knight.
So The Dark Knight was a hugely popular film with
a lot of people seeing it in theaters
for
now.
A lot of reasons. Obviously, the second largest grosser of all time. But I think what really made people love The Dark Knight so much in terms of even, let's just talk in terms of the writers, not the whole Heath Ledger thing, not the fact that they had an absolutely dream cast.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way that they took the spirit of the comics and its entire legacy and basically found a way to continually flip the moral compass in that story down to the prisoner's dilemma where they have the two fairies pitted against one another and you're not sure who's going to do the right thing and who's going to do the wrong thing. And in case you're one of the last people on earth who hasn't seen this or for some reason it hasn't arrived in your country yet, I won't give away what happens. But essentially, there was a level of complexity and flipping the script around.
Definitely.
That I think is what made the film as critically popular as it was. The next one is a comedy called In Bruges. Again, something that everybody talked about when it was out and then it sort of got forgotten. Following that is, and these are still in the number 9s ratings, is an animated film called Waltz with Bashir.
Which I'm mad because we didn't get that at the Toronto Film Fest.
Right. This was the hardest, one of the hardest tickets to get at the Toronto Film Festival. Definitely the most hyped film. The synopsis is like this. One night at a bar, an old friend tells director Ari Folman about a recurring nightmare in which he's chased by 26 vicious dogs. Every night, the same number of beasts. The two men conclude that there's a connection to their Israeli army mission in the first Lebanon War of the early 80s. Ari is surprised that he can't remember a thing anymore about that period of his life. Intrigued by this riddle, he decides to meet and interview old friends and comrades around the world. He needs to discover the truth about that time and about himself. As Ari delves deeper and deeper into the mystery, his memory begins to creep up in surreal images. This film is all done in a very innovative and interesting style of animation. Interestingly enough, Waltz with Bashir did not end up on the Oscars Best Animated Feature list, but it did end up in the Best Foreign Language Film list.
Wow.
Strange, but true. The next one on Dan's number 9 truly excellent list of films is Guy Maddin's sort of biopic, self-biopic, My Winnipeg. This was actually a film that came about when there was an initiative in Canada to have some of its best directors tell stories about their own hometowns and in an exploration of Canadian cities and the geography and the culture. And the project, the initiative, was eventually cut short and canceled. But this film was the first one that was made, and this came out to all sorts of critical acclaim. Guy Maddin has a way of doing things slightly off the beaten path, and he certainly took some liberties with narrative form in this film. So highly recommended. He actually goes back to the places where he grew up, and he found actors who looked, in his own words, eerily like his own young family at the time that he would have been playing out this story in his life. So there's this strange now and then examination of his early life. I always think about what it would be like to make a film of my family in the neighborhood where I grew up, in my home, and show that to the world.
And who you would cast.
And not even just the actors, but just how weird it would be to have people watching my bedroom and my basement and my everything about it and our dynamic. It just, there's something about all that that seems a little bit too invasive to me. But that's just probably my personality.
Probably.
I tend to keep all of that a bit at arm's length.
Well, that's all right too.
Dan's got one film under his title, The Dazzling Piece of Perfection That Is Rightfully Worshipped by One and All, But I'm a Disturbed Imperfectionist Wary of Traditional Joy. And that is the film WALL-E.
WALL-E. Eva.
And then he has his category, special category for films that boldly defied categorization and were brutally published by the Muggles. And yes, the special font gives away that my film is one of them. And the films are Speed Racer, Dan's own Sex and Death 101, Be Kind, Rewind.
Okay, that's the one with Jack Black?
Yeah, I think that was Michelle Gondry's film.
Uh-huh, that's right.
A very strange film. I mean, it sort of seemed like an American film, but it was decidedly un-American in so many ways. It was
very much so.
Bizarre Michelle Gondry-ness. Cloverfield, he put down.
Scary.
To which he parenthetically adds, actually got pretty decent reviews, but the boos of the booers were loud. And Pathology. And then he goes to his Oscar, I Love You Cinema, the only a little overrated. And on that list, we find Doubt, Milk, The Class, Frost Nixon, and Slumdog Millionaire. But for some real fun, let's go down towards the bottom of this extraordinarily long list.
Keep going.
And get to the painlessly mediocre list. Here we find things like City of Men, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Marley and Me.
Oh, Lord.
A film which made absolutely heaps and heaps of money before it gave the market over to Paul Blart Mall Cop.
I think it gave the market over to Hotel for Dogs and then Paul Blart Mall Cop.
What Somewhere is the matter with you people out
Chihuahua,
there going to see these
Beverly
movies?
Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Please call me, email me, tell me what it is.
What's up with dog movies? I did not get the memo.
What's up with $14 at the cinema for dog movies?
Thank you.
That's all I'm saying.
Me too.
The Happening.
Okay.
He put Nim's Island on this. I thought Nim's Island was a great film. I thought Abigail Breslin was a great actress, and I thought she did well in that film.
I didn't see that one.
the other Bolin girl, Meet Dave. I can't believe Meet Dave is this high up. The Oscar I Love You Cinema, the You've Got to Be Kidding Me list, Miracle at St. Anna, Valkyrie, Gran Torino, and What Doesn't Kill You. And then as we get to the bottom of the list and we get to numbers 282 and onward, the truly painful 88 Minutes, starring Al Pacino in the What Were You Thinking, Al? Do You Really Need the Money That Badly? The spoof of 300, Meet the Spartans. The Lost. And College.
I really need to get a TV.
And surprisingly, there is nothing at the zero rating mark, which Dan calls his once in a blue moon shitstorm. He says nothing that foul this year. College was saved by me liking the way Haley Bennett slouches. Which is classic, Dan.
Oh my God. Wow, that's quite an extensive list.
Yeah, it's a long one. Now, let's just talk for a second about the best documentaries at the Oscars this year.
Oh, yes, please.
One of our favorite films, Man on Wire.
Ugh, thank you.
As we predicted.
We must be psychic.
Trouble the Water, The Garden, Encounters at the End of the World, which is this epic film about a guy in places where people just normally shouldn't be.
Such as?
I'm sure it's inspiring and magnificent. Well, you know, Antarctica and Everest and...
the middle of...
all of those places.
Nowhere.
I'm seeing an awful lot of Curious Case of Benjamin Button. I have a very hard time believing that this film really should show up in almost every single category of the Oscars this year.
All I'm saying is, it's like some sort of club, you know?
Well, surely.
Once you get into it, they're always going to keep nominating the popular people. They're always going to be nominated prom king and queen. And it's almost a turnoff to go see those movies. Whether it be good or not, I don't understand why they're the only ones that always get every single category.
What's your vote for Best Picture based on what you think the Academy is going to go for? We've got The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Frost Nixon, Milk, The Reader, and Slumdog Millionaire.
You want to put your
good name on the line and take a shot at it?
Sure, let's play the game. Any callers want to call in?
I'm telling you, it's either going to be...
Milk or Benjamin Button. Milk or the butt.
Well, the thing is, almost every year, whoever wins Best Director wins Best Picture. So you got to decide whether Danny Boyle or David Fincher or Ron Howard. Or Gus Van Sant or Stephen Daldry are the favorite. And every one of these guys is sort of needing his Oscar. So the old boys nod's going to go in one of those directions.
What about the Caps? Who's up for Best Male Actor?
We got Richard Jenkins in The Visitor. He was extraordinary in that film. Such an understated performance. The Visitor didn't get anything else. It actually just got... It's just like Melissa Leo in Frozen River. Richard Jenkins sort of exclusively got something for this film. And he did not an over-the-top performance.
No.
He didn't do anything outlandish. It was actually so extraordinarily understated that it's amazing that this was noticed. But I think this was one of those films that I kept hearing people talking about, this unsettling, very personal, very intimate performance that he did.
It was amazing to watch. Really taken aback by his performance.
Well, then you have a couple of other ones that are interesting in Best Actor. For example, you have Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. Mm-hmm. And now this is Mickey Rourke way, way past his prime.
He's been on Perez Hilton and TMZ far too much lately for my liking. So.
But this was, again, a tiny little film. Darren Aronofsky, who's always making strange, unusual films for Hollywood, going against the grain. And Mickey Rourke is probably his last shot at an Oscar ever. So you got him against Richard Jenkins, who's 60. Then you got Brad Pitt, who I think is an absolutely amazing actor. He's extremely versatile. He's totally consistent. He was amazing in Burn After Reading, and then he goes to doing The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the perennial Sean Penn. And then you've got Frank Langella doing Frost Nixon.
Mm-hmm. There's no Leonardo DiCaprio.
No, there is none.
Oh, he must be crying in his sleep.
In Best Actress, you've got Anne Hathaway doing Rachel Getting Married. Mm-hmm. She was a hugely popular favorite in Toronto this year. People said that what she does in that film is out of this world. Angie Jolie doing Changeling. Mm-hmm. Some people loved the film, some people hated it. Then you have Melissa Leo doing Frozen River, of course, the small upstart film. One of those standout performances that grabs everybody's attention. Could happen. again, a perennial Meryl Streep for doubt. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a year where Meryl Streep hasn't been nominated as long as I've been alive.
Probably not.
And then Kate Winslet.
Lover.
For The Reader. So the best actress category looks almost the same as it does every year.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to call. Anyway, it'll be fun to see what happens. I've already had people...
Do you want to make some bets?
...mention to me that this is probably going to be one of the quieter years for the Oscars.
In what way?
Just that no one really cares or no one really knows about these movies. I mean, really, some of these films had very, very limited releases.
Right.
These were not Titanics and Lord of the Rings type films. Even the biggest favorites probably were not released in more than 200 or 300 markets.
I think a lot of it
has to do... Or 200 or 300 theaters, I'm sorry. Amy Adams got a Best Supporting Actress for Doubt.
She did?
Yeah.
Good for her.
Penelope Cruz for Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
I loved her in that.
I think she might get it. I think she will.
I hope she does because I was in the worst, darkest mood and I got dragged to that movie not wanting to see anything. And I sat through the first 3 minutes and when she got on the screen, she made me laugh. She was funny and psycho, and I loved it.
I think it was one of the best Woody Allen movies in years.
I'll have to agree with you on that
one. I thought everybody was really, really solid. It was a great script. It was well done. The color in it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. She was beautiful.
So you have Amy Adams, Penelope Cruz, Viola Davis for Doubt again, Taraji P. Henson for Curious Case of Benjamin Button, and Marissa Tomei, who is an extraordinary actress, for The Wrestler. Two of the actors in The Wrestler nominated.
Yeah.
Out of a very, very small cast. Best Supporting Male Actor, you have Josh Brolin for Milk, Heath Ledger for The Dark Knight, basically a shoe-in. Robert Downey Jr. for Tropic Thunder, which is a
no,
great...
No, wait, what?
Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. for Tropic Thunder, which is a great nomination because he was great in Iron Man, no question. Actually, what he did in Iron Man was clever and sensitive and rich. But what he did in Tropic Thunder was so out of bounds.
It was so... Even if you watch the DVD and then listen to the commentary where they...
He's even doing his character in the character. Entire commentary until that character dies and he flips to the other character. But at one point, he's actually playing... He's playing like a Chinese or Vietnamese... No, he's playing an Australian actor playing a black actor playing a Vietnamese soldier. And he's layering them all. I mean, it was just for that. I mean, and the thing is that people don't win for comedy. So I just hope he gets it, but there's no way. There's no way.
Never say never.
He's going to get that against Heath Ledger. It's not going to happen. No.
Oh, that would just be a slap in the face.
Yeah. And then the ever amazing Philip Seymour Hoffman for Doubt, but he's not going to get it. And Michael Shannon for Revolutionary Road. It'll be an interesting year. Listen, it may not be something that everybody in the world is familiar with in terms of the list, but I think it's a very rich year. This was a packed roller coaster year. I mean, it had intense ups and downs. Films that should have done huge did terribly. Films that should have completely just gone by the wayside did huge box office. In terms of just the acting world itself, I mean, things were upside down and left and right, and
with the whole writer's strike.
If you follow this stuff, it'll be a fascinating show. It's important for us to bring to attention some of the things that were missed. We loved Detroit Metal City at the Toronto Film Festival. We saw a great documentary called Dungeon Masters about people who love playing D&D. Hunger by Steve McQueen was totally overlooked, and I'm sorry about that one. JVCD, which was Jean-Claude Van Damme's film, was a very cool postmodern effort. I guess it's just too small of a demographic. I don't know. It just got overlooked. I think he definitely was a contender for a nomination for actor.
Punisher, severely overlooked.
Oh, come on.
What? Go to caramsongs.com.
Anyway, I wanted to mention, so that's our movie wrap-up for this week, and...
It was fun.
I would have talked about the SAG thing a lot longer, except that it's kind of a dead issue now, that it's in the hands of the people who are on the board of SAG and no longer in the hands of the actors. I am going to be doing an episode coming up about anxiety and panic disorder, and I am still looking for people to send me emails about it. We'll keep it anonymous, but I'd like to hear your own personal stories about that.
I could send you one every 5 seconds.
Also, I just wanted to mention that we love using Skype on our program. it's one of our sponsors, but I use Skype out to make phone calls out to all of my friends in Canada and to take calls in for my interviewers, actually. And I record those interviews right from Skype and use them on the show. So if you're interested in a way to call people instead of paying those crazy long distance charges you pay your carriers and literally be able to call internationally for 2 to 3 cents per minute, check out the Skype Out program. If you visit the link off of caromcast.com, then you'll be helping keep our show alive and well. And feel free to write to us anytime at info@caromcast.com. That's info@caramcast.com. I want to thank Amy for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for listening. Make sure to check us out also on iTunes, where you can subscribe to our channel and get new episodes right to your iPod every time they come out. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you next time.
Peace.